Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35,000ths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March, they never changed anything.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
And tonight we introduce a new podcast, which will have their own channel here soon. The Wealth Watchers, V-T-H-E, The Wealth Watchers with Amani Murph. Live stream number right now, 619-768-2945. And good evening, Amani.
Hi, how are you?
I'm better than terrific that you're here. Well, what's The Wealth Watchers all about? Tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then answer the question, what are The Wealth Watchers all about?
Well, my name is Amani Murph, and I am originally from Wisconsin, and I have been in financial services for a little over 10 years now. I have worked as a registered investment advisor, financial advisor, stockbroker, insurance sales rep. And now the reason why I'm interested in discussing what I've learned is because I feel like people can use information in easy, simple to understand language. So Wealth Watchers will be an avenue to share financial concepts to help people identify trends and opportunities in a way that is easy for them to understand and digest.
Good. All right, so people that are interested in asking Amani questions a little bit later on, 619-768-2945, and just press 1, and we can patch you directly into Amani. Now, let's take a person who, there's many ways you can attack this. Let's say a person, they're on a 9-to-5, and they're looking for a better way, and they don't want to get an Amway kit or a Mary Kay kit. Any suggestions?
Well, first I would suggest that they save a little money. And then I would suggest that they try to figure out what they have a passion and a talent for, something that they're interested in working and doing for free, you know, because if they're interested in doing it for free, the likelihood is that they'll, if they have an opportunity to do it for money, they'll do it very well. And so I would suggest that they find a passion and then try to capitalize on that. And there are a million ways to make money. So, you know.
At least.
Yeah. So you want to start with something that you enjoy. That's what I would say.
All right. Now, do they need to go back to school or learn it trial and error, or what do you suggest?
Not necessarily, but they may need to pick up a new skill or get involved in the industry and learn how whatever the industry is that they choose, how it works and how people are making money. If they need certifications or if they need to go back to school, then, you know, go out and do it. But there are very many opportunities that don't require any additional education. Of course,
education.
There are some.
That's true. There are many of them out there. Well, you're a bit of an entrepreneur. Could you give us, you know, if you don't mind, sharing a little bit of your entrepreneurial adventure?
Sure. So my first business, I started when I was a freshman in college. And it was soliciting businesses to put ads in a guidebook for incoming freshmen. And it was called the Collegiate Guide to Nashville's Hotspots. And it just gave the freshman students an overview of what businesses had, what products and services, and were willing to offer them a discount on top of that. And so that was the very first thing. At that time, I was studying political science, but I knew that I wanted to be a business owner. After I left school, I started working in financial services. And as a financial services professional, as a financial advisor, it's very much like having a franchise because you are in charge of your own success. If you do not hunt, you will not eat. So I was very much a business owner in that I had to maintain business or else I wouldn't get paid. That was a
commission based type of situation.
Correct. And so,
okay.
I'd like to discuss later why people who talk to financial advisors and insurance agents need to be aware almost because not necessarily be aware, but they need to be aware that these people are salespeople. So that's just a whole other topic for a different conversation. But I feel like that was certainly a business. And then during that time, I was a property owner and I had an Airbnb, and that was an additional source of income. It was a full-time vacation home for people traveling to Nashville. So that mm-hmm. was another business. And in the meantime, I've had plenty of others. There were other things that I did to make money that required, you know, me to have an EIN. So it just, those are just the ones that I could think of right now.
I guess coined the term or caught my attention that I think more African Americans need to, well, anybody actually, but since I say black people, if you don't hunt, you don't eat.
Yeah.
And that's what entrepreneurs or salespeople have to do. And there's a lot of reward with that, but then there's some people that they just want a nice cushy desk job or.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
You're not hunting sitting at that desk. You're not hunting when you're at the circle of, what do you call it, the social services office.
Well, you might be hunting somebody else, you know.
Yeah, but you're right. You have to, if you don't hunt, you don't eat. So now, could you recommend did you read any books on or go to any workshops, like or maybe you were trained in how to hunt, a.k.a. sales and marketing?
Absolutely. One of the best books that I've ever read on sales is by an author named Robert Cialdini. That's Cialdini, Robert Cialdini, and it's called Influence. That book is the absolute gold standard now in financial sales. So that book is a game changer. It's available on Audible. I would highly recommend it for anybody, let alone salespeople.
You know, this is Robert who now?
Cialdini. C-I-A-L-D-I-N-I.
I just found it. I mean, I found him at least.
Influence is the book, yes.
Influence.
Correct.
Okay. All right, continue on.
I don't know. There are many things that I can talk about with sales. Another book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
I read the covers off that book.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
I read the covers off of How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, yeah. And another Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Those books are classics, you know?
But now what about workshops, anything like that?
Oh, yeah, I've done several and participated as a speaker, panelist, and, you know, also just a listener, a learner. I've done several. I mean, there's so many. But, yeah, the information is out there. It's just you vibrate an energy of wanting to know something, and it just seems to appear. That's what happens.
Workshop. Okay, I like it. I like it. Selling. I mean, dentists sell. I mean, teeth don't just knock on a dentist's door. But
doctors,
dentists, actually everybody's a salesperson. They might not think that, but.
Everyone.
They are.
Even
that's
one thing that is important to understand about economics. Everything is an exchange of energy. Money is just a symbol of energy. It is saying that what you have provided me is of some value. So whatever you're doing will, if it is of value, you can derive an income from it. The value is not necessarily up to you. It's up to the market. But, you know, in some circumstances, it's all about marketing. In all circumstances, it's all about marketing and putting yourself out there, even as an employee. You exchange your time for money, and a person, your employer, they deem your service as worth that exchange for money. So, you know, it's all energy exchange.
That's true. That's true. Matter of fact, about 2 weeks ago, I saw something where, you know, you can exchange your energy or time and labor for a paycheck, or you can get into another quadrant and build assets.
Yeah. Is that what your that book?
Yeah, that's one of the books. How many of you know who I'm talking about too? Here's what I've read from Kiyosaki. Let's see. I read his very first book, which was probably self-published. If You Want to Be Rich and Happy, Don't Go to School. That was his very first book. Not a part of the Rich Dad series. And of course, Dad Poor Dad. I think the second book was Cash Flow Quadrant. Let's see, Rich Dad's Guide to Investing. There was another book before that, though. I read about his first five or six books in the Rich Dad series. I played the Cash Flow board game 101 and 102 probably over 300 times easy.
Well, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, have you played that game yet? Cash Flow 101 or 102? Okay.
Never played
you
it.
You know, I used to say that game, and I'm going to still say it. Cash, the people out there listening, If you haven't read any of Robert Kiyosaki's book, I would recommend the first one that he self-published. If you want to be rich and happy, don't go to school. And then follow that up with Rich Dad Poor Dad. But the board game Cash Flow, I would say it's like Monopoly on steroids. But then I begin to look at Monopoly and to dissect that game, because if you look at the board game Monopoly and look at, I would say, three properties, the very first ones that people call the ghetto, they're in purple. Baltic and Mediterranean and the electric company. The rest of the game, forget about it. But if you duplicate in real life, buy raw land or buy land, it could be in the city, but I'm prejudiced towards, I like the rural stuff. Buy raw land with nothing on it and then improve it by building. And I say the other lot on the Monopoly game is utilities. You can actually do that in real life. Because with the cash flow board game, you know, you got the inner circle, and then you got the rat race. And then you get out of the rat race. But anyway, I got my own rules for that game now. But I think the Monopoly game, just concentrate on those two things in real life. Where can you find cheap land or lots and then improve them? Anyway, what do you have? Well, people that are interested in your, you know, services, or, you know, do you teach people how to become entrepreneurs or help them get started? What services do you offer?
For me? Amani?
Yes.
Well, right now, I'm not offering any services. I don't want any new clients. I do have clients that I've worked with for years that I will continue to advise as a financial advisor. At this point, I will have some books coming out, and people can use my services in that capacity. They can listen to the podcast and call in with questions. I am not going to provide services the way I did in a traditional way. I want people to learn how to manage their own money, so that way we can break the vicious cycle of depending on a broken industry to serve our needs.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I guess you already explained there. You already got enough clients. You're going to have to come out with books. Because I was seeing if you were up to doing a workshop. But that's another. What kind of workshops? Well, I mean, what kind of topics would they cover?
Some things that we might talk about: trends in industry, opportunities in industries, ways to grow their money, how to protect their assets, how to leverage their time as a consumer and as an investor, how to read your 401k statement, day trading, trading stocks, you know, how currencies work, and also
you
behavioral.
Know what? You brought up two topics. Let's go with how do currencies work?
Well, this is not a topic that I wanted to get into today, but every country has their many countries have their own currency. The United States is the world's benchmark for currency value, okay? So certain currencies are worth more than the United States dollar. Certain currencies are worth much less. Certain countries, third world countries, like, say, Namibia, a very small country, let me just see exactly what their currency is up against the U.S. dollar. Their currency value is...
You got an Apple on your phone, too.
Namibian. Okay. So their form of currency in Namibia, which is just a country that I picked out of the air. I guess they're calling it the Namibian dollar. It's so 14.4 Namibian dollars for every one United States dollar. So the buying power for that particular currency is not as strong as the buying power for one United States dollar. Now, if you wanted to trade currencies, basically you're just watching the value of currencies go up and down throughout the day. Supply and demand, that's really what it's about. Currencies fluctuate for various reasons. I mean, trading, the tariff situation that we just are dealing with now with China, it could be natural disasters that cause currency to fluctuate. Very many things. And so you can take advantage of the fluctuations and the values of currency if it goes in your favor. Let's say, for example, you go to Namibia and you buy $100 worth of their currency. Since it's around $14, you'd have around 1,400 Namibian dollars. That's 1,400 Namibian dollars. Right now, that would only buy $100 worth of American goods, okay? But let's say Namibia's political situation gets stronger. Suddenly they discover, you know, the country has lots of oil or something like that. And then suddenly you have 14,000 Namibian dollars, and the value of their currency increases because their, you know, economic situation, their outlook has increased. So let's say now the currency is worth for every 6 Namibian dollars is now worth 1 United States dollar. That increases the value, the buying power of that currency. Now you can trade in those Namibian dollars for more than the 100 American dollars that you originally purchased it for. Do you understand? I know I just rattled off a bunch of
stuff. I understand.
And I don't want to. Okay. Yeah, I like to ramble. Maybe you understand it. It's kind of a little bit too high level. I think that I want to say more low level, because the people who want to know about currencies, I feel like they're a little more advanced than just the regular American who's out here wondering if they have enough insurance to bury themselves, you know, if they pass away. You know, they have insurance through work. A lot of people are not even aware of what their benefits are at work. That's the one thing that I've run into. So they're not going to understand currencies. They don't even understand how their mortgage works. You know, these people are just out here needing the most basic help. And these are people with professional degrees, doctorates, MDs. They're not just, you know, uneducated. These are highly educated people who don't understand simple financial concepts. So that's my mission right now, is just to help people understand the basics. And people should not be ashamed that they don't understand. That's another thing. People feel like they're not smart because they don't understand financial concepts. Well, you know, they shouldn't feel that way, because let's say, for instance, a teacher might feel intimidated by not knowing financial concepts. But if I were to show up to her job and try to teach kids, like fourth grade kids, at, you know, hopping around like popcorn, I would probably pass out, you know, so everybody has their own lane. So I feel like my lane is to help educate people on the basics.
That's true. All right. There are people that need to learn the basics. I was going to ask you a question about trends, but there are many different types of trends.
Yeah.
Before I go to that, let's see. We got a caller here, 773 out of Chicago. Your line is open. No microphone.
Okay, with the money teaching this evening. Good evening, and how's everybody?
Hi, thank you.
Good.
I like the show because it really goes all the way back to understand what arithmetic is, and that's what we got away from years ago.
Yeah.
To understand currency, you got to understand the worth of what you're purchasing. Is it worth the money that you are purchasing? And the other part of the worth is how do you balance the two? How is the balance of the worth and the quantity and the quality of what you're purchasing for the dollar that you're spending for loaf of bread? What is the quality of the bread? What is the worth of the bread? And all of those things go together. And this is where our miseducation has came into play, because everybody should have that knowledge of worth, quality, and quantity.
Yeah.
Everybody. That should be one of the first subjects that you're studying in school. And fortunately, I were able to have a father that taught that system.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's important to note that what's important and what is worth it to one person is subjective, because it may not be worth it to another person, you know? And so that's the thing about worth. It's subjective, you know. It's like we understand gold, and everybody's like, well, gold is valuable, and gold, you know, the reason why, you know, the dollar isn't worth anything is because it's not backed by gold. Well, gold is the same thing as paper dollars. It only has a perceived value that we put on it. So worth is determined. It's what we make it. So we have to determine what really is worth it. What are the things that have actual value in this life? You know, what is it that we're really buying? And what it is, what I feel in this particular society, in this economy, what is worth the most is time. Because that is the only thing that we do not get to buy. We get to buy time in certain ways, I should restate that, but we can't get it back. It's only forward moving. And so right now, wealth is how do you leverage time? How can you leverage time? What do you get to do with your time? That's what it is, really, right now. You know,
how do you leverage the time? And what is the time worth for the quality that you're building, whatever it is that you're building?
True.
Is it worth that? Is that what you're building worth the time that you put in building it for everybody else that's in the community or wherever they are? Because that's what trading comes into play.
Yeah.
And then that's where your tax comes into play. What is your house worth? Nobody has been teaching what is the house worth is the reason why your tax is so high.
Yeah.
That plays a part in how the community collects money to finance education. What is one community worth over another community that has all the things that it needs to teach their children. And our poor communities.
And so this is a very important point, what you're saying, because that is what worth really, what is really worth, and how wealth is built. Like, what you're talking about is family and community. And a lot of times people have, and this is only human nature, you can't be mad at people for this. People will only do what's in their best interest. No matter what their race, people will always do something that's in their best interest. Now, if they're smart, they will, okay? Now, the reason why, business works is because if you create a good business relationship, whatever you do is in both of your best interests. It's a win-win scenario, right? So
yes.
That is what's important. And so when we think about, oh, well, people need to do what's best for the community, people aren't going to do what's best for the community. We can just end that, know it. That whole hope is we need to just quit that. People are going to do what's best for themselves, period. And if they can do something for you, if you want something from them, you need to be offering them something. So it's a win-win scenario, okay? That's what it has to be. And so I feel like what you were saying is important because the only way we will build strong communities, and we always like to, throw out black community, build a strong black community. The only way we're going to do that is by having strong families. And strong families are only built by people who are doing what's in their best interest and in the best interest of their family. They're only going to think about themselves and then maybe their kids. They're not going to think about you, period, unless you're in their family. So I feel like that's just something that we need to be aware of, and we just need to own that and embrace and accept that we need to just stop with the, oh, we've got to do what's best. Do what's best for your family, and if you're doing what's best for your family, it is the best thing for the community. If you're raising a strong family, we will have strong communities. We don't need to do anything but that. That's it.
Well,
you remember
the can of worms on that one. Let's put a pin in that one. I'm going to play this quick audio that I'm going to tie into that. Because I agree with everything you're saying, but I might get some hate calls on this one.
Come with the hate calls.
Do you
yeah.
feel that we should be concerned with what's owed to us as far as reparations
mm-hmm.
and things that were stolen?
Excellent question. I believe we should be concerned with things that are owed to us as it relates to reparations, things that were stolen, unpaid wages from slavery. However, the question becomes, what do you prioritize? Do you prioritize your external reparations, or do you prioritize your internal reparations? See, for me, the internal always precedes the external, and that the external should not come until the internal has taken place, or the external will benefit the oppressor more than it benefits you. In other words, I think there's white people who are praying for black people to get reparations. I'm going to say it again. I think there's white people who are praying for black people to get reparations. Why? Because we have no internal infrastructure. We have no economic cyclical network. If we got $1 trillion today for slavery, white folks would be $1 trillion richer tomorrow, because where are you spending it? With white businesses, white restaurants, white hotels, the white airlines. You're buying homes from white realtors. If you don't have an economic network to capture your money, it goes back to the people who gave it to you. So my message to the reparations movement, don't stop the fighting. But as hard as you fight for reparations, you should be fighting equally hard for internal reparations. Let's take the $1 trillion we have already and build the political economic infrastructure in the black community, so when we are paid back, when we receive our financial retribution that was due to our ancestors, we'll be able to capture it. If you can't capture the $1 trillion that you are generating already, that you're spending disproportionately on malt liquor, disproportionately on Korean manufactured hair, disproportionately on European automobiles, disproportionately on vacationing. If you can't even contain the $1 trillion spending power you got now, what the hell are you going to do with $100 trillion of that? You see? So my thing is, I think we're putting a cart before the horse. You understand? Put the horse first. And the horse is internal reparations, internal. And the reason I say internal comes first, external comes second, in addition to the reason I already gave, is it eats away at your motivation and resolve and your self-reliance to change your situation. If you say, I need reparations to fix Black America, you're giving our progress, the control of our progress over to our oppressor. You're saying we can't fix our problems until the white man pays us. So until the white man pays us, we don't fix our problems. So you're giving him control over Black progress. Don't give him that victory. Because if the white man says, Black folks don't think they can do nothing until we give them reparations. Oh, wow, really? Well, don't give them none. I guess they'll never do nothing. No, you don't say that. And what that does is it makes Black folks complacent. Well, we need reparations. Until we get reparations, we can't fix anything. You see, we become apathetic. No, we can't do nothing. We need the money that reparations is going to give us. And my question is, how much more money are you going to get than the money that you're blowing anyway? You're worried about being paid, but you're not worried about saving what you already have. Deal with the internal contradictions first. If we don't, we will blow this reparations movement if we don't take care of home first before we start going out to war with the European. My question is for the reparations movement. Number one, who are the lawyers arguing this? How much are they to be paid as a result of the payout? Because most...
Okay, I'm in that audio right there. But what he just said, you've got to take care of home first, and that's why I played that piece, because I agree with you 100% of mine. You got to repair the family first. Get into the generational wealth thing with your family first, and then everything else will be taken care of. That's the way I see it. Your comment, Amani, on that?
Yeah, the reparation conversation has been very expensive to Black people. And when I say it's been very expensive, it's because I mean that we've wasted a lot of time on talking about it when we could have been talking about something else. Reparations is not going to happen, and people just need to let it go and talk about new opportunities, because they don't feel like they owe us anything, okay? Stop begging for something that is not going to come to fruition. White people in America, descendants of slave masters, and the, you know, the powers that be, when they freed slaves, they definitely made promises. Well, you know, they made some promises. Some promises were made. They were not delivered on. Okay, yes, fine. That is true. We were wrong. But at the same time, they feel like their debt was paid because they let you out and didn't kill you. They didn't kill us. So they feel like, why should we be entitled to that? And then on the flip side, even if they were like, yeah, you know, you guys do deserve reparations. We're gonna pay African Americans money. Well, how do we determine who gets what and when? The process is so cumbersome. The payouts, like Dr. Umar was just saying, like the lawyers, the attorneys, the money would go through so many different channels and be whittled down to the point where it wouldn't even be worth all the whining that we've done. Just move on. Move on to something else. If a person wants to continue to fight for reparations and bump their head up against a steel trestle, I couldn't care less. But I just won't be doing that. I don't expect it to happen in my lifetime. So there you go. That's how I feel.
Well, I agree with you, because around here we talk about do-it-yourself reparations. In other words, like we were talking about the other day when you brought it up, and I did a podcast the next day on it. I did it was last week. It was Booker T. Washington at Tuskegee in his Chapter 10 people, the book Up from Slavery, Amani, yeah. I was talking to her and she brought it up. And that's what I'm talking about, do-it-yourself reparations. And that he did that during the Jim Crow era, and where they learned how to make bricks and even nails. And they got so good at it that the white folks in that community became their primary customer. The first buildings of Tuskegee University, as they call it now, they did it. They went out and they made an opportunity. Pleasant, your hand is up. What do you have to say? No, I agree with you, Amani. The family. If you concentrate on the family and generational wealth, that's the ticket. Pleasant.
The first thing we got, what we are doing, and that's the reason why you see what we are seeing on our website. If you don't produce the product of consumption, you don't have a vested interest in this capitalistic system. And if you don't have a vested interest in the capitalistic system, you have nothing coming. And that's what we've been practicing.
Give us the name of your domain name. I know what it is, but you didn't mean it.
Yeah, our domain name is Infinity Building Economics -Black Political Action Committees. In that domain name, we have another website. It's the Environment Mission, the Empowerment Vision. It's to where we are producing product and we're selling product all over the country, all over the world, matter of fact.
I'm going to have to interject because this is great and everything. But it's not the only way. Amazon is the big, almost arguably the biggest company in the world, and they don't produce anything. So we have to advance our thinking. We don't have to produce things. And now it's great if we can produce something, but people are out here getting paid, leveraging what other people produce and connecting them. We need to hop on the bandwagons of the future and just let the past be what it is. It is a lesson, and it is an opportunity for us to build on. But the new things that are available to us, the new tools, especially with regard to, you know, programming, internet coding, providing infrastructure and supply chains for us to connect, those things don't require material. They just require ingenuity.
I mean, you're talking about e-commerce?
E-commerce, yeah. And we need to be focused on that. We need to be focused on the way things are headed. For example, you know, now automation of industry. Everything is becoming automated. I wanted to talk a bit about transportation. A lot of black people make money in trucking, shipping. In 10 years, the industry is going to take a shift because right now they are making every effort to automate shipping and transportation. Amazon is one of the larger companies. They spent over $450 million in 2018 to figure out how to automate their shipping. This isn't a game. So we need to be thinking about how to go forward and create new ways of connecting ourselves to one another. And it doesn't even have to be big.
Yeah, you bring up some good points because you're right. Jeff Bezos, if he produced anything, it was the website.
Yeah.
Zappos, same thing. So you're absolutely right. Now, he's got people on his platform that might produce stuff, but he himself... Go ahead, Pleasant.
There a system that's in place now that she's talking about, that they're delivering product, and it's like a little airplane that flies through the air and they load it and send it to where it needs to go.
Yeah,
a little drone.
Drone. Yeah. That's being done, and that has been being done when I was in the trucking business, I was in the trucking business for 35 years. And
wow.
I saw all of this coming to a point.
Coming, yeah.
Where before the drones started to hit the street. And
yeah,
all
and
of
now,
that's true, what you're saying. And
yeah,
not
the
only
drones.
That, they're working on getting our cars that we ride in to do the same thing without a chauffeur.
Oh, absolutely. Actually,
So all of that's in the future, and my thing is, I think I'm being on the ground that we need to produce everything that we are wearing and everything that we are eating. We need to be producing that so we'll have a foundation. And there's enough of us to do what you're talking about to take that industry to the next level. Because
that
industry it's on the rise. That industry that you're talking about is on the rise, and we need
and
people like yourself to take it in those terms to take it to the next level so that we all can have a part of it. And then we need to have a financial institution as to where we can finance, as you just stated, what Amazon has done and how much money they spent. We need to be able to finance the foundation of making that happen. We need to have that vested interest in place.
I think also
okay,
where
you,
it starts.
You,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I was clearing away from you, Amani. I was asking you to comment on it.
Oh, I was going to say that I totally forgot what I was going to say, so now I'm going to say something else. Feel like one of the main points of what he was just saying is, you know, we can make our own things. Yes, we can. Right now, this is the easiest time in history for us to make and sell and ship and get what we make out to other people. And it's only going to get easier. But on the other side of it, and I just remember what I was going to say, is there are industries that haven't even been born yet. So we just really need to take some time to dig into our imagination. Just use your imagination at this point and just try things, even on a small scale. One thing that I've run across is besides the drones, I think it was Amazon. And when I talked about automation earlier, I meant to say Uber. Uber wants to automate. Amazon, in 2017, they filed a patent to have underground pods instead of trucks, underground pods delivering things through tunnels. No more trains and trucks, underground pods, okay? And so this pods and these underground shipping will not need any people, but people will still be needed in some capacity. And we have to think about the ways in which people will be needed. And let's think ahead now. We need to think ahead on how people will be valuable in the future. How as people, what are the things that will always be valuable in the future that will not be automated?
Well, here's something that's being automated already. Your farming equipment is being automated, and it was started to be done in China. There won't be anybody. There won't be anybody driving tractors. There'll be computers driving the tractors.
Right.
There'll be all computerized, and that's going on right here in Iowa right now. Not tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
Right now, that's being done in Iowa, in the United States.
Yeah. I think that's something that we need to focus on now is coding, and the new language. This coding and computer systems. And I really don't know the first thing, but it's a new language. This is an entirely new language. We cannot be left out of conversations because we can't speak the language. That's what we need to be focused
Amen.
On now. To try to understand this newly developing language.
The coding, what you're talking about, that's been going on for years, but we didn't pay any attention to what the coding was about and what it was saying. That's been going on for at least 50 or 75 years.
Yeah. Longer even. Yes, you're exactly right.
Yes.
And so we have an opportunity now to learn because it apparently at this point it's not even that complicated. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know, but I do feel like there's an opportunity for us, instead of talking about reparations, we need to be talking about this newly emerging language and how to learn it.
Well, Monty, I agree with everything you said, particularly the part where there are industries out here that haven't been born yet, but somebody's walking around pregnant, about to give birth to these industries.
Exactly.
And some of this stuff, that's what I like about these podcasts, is you get a lot of ideas in real time, but you don't have to go through the bureaucracy of a college institution. And I went to college, so I'm not bashing that, but I'm just saying you don't have to go through the bureaucracy of the government.
You don't have to go to college to learn how to code. You can just
learn. Right. Well, you know, one of the things we have our Facebook page is titled E-Commerceville, which is a name that one of my mentors, she's my social media mentor, Robin Maven, she's on the line right now. She came up with the name E-Commerceville because, everything you've been saying, I don't know of anybody offering a degree in e-commerce. Now, you might be able to take a course or two or whatever, but a lot of the stuff you want to learn about e-commerce, you're going to have to tune into Facebook, Blog Talk, somebody else's podcast, YouTube, somebody's website, what have you, and learn it that way. And like I say, there are a bunch of people walking around pregnant that will be giving birth to new industries, new jobs that we haven't even heard of tonight.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, something will pop up.
Yeah.
That's why I like to pay attention to the hobbyists. I like paying attention to the hobbyists on YouTube, because you don't know which one of those will boom into an industry. And then I look at what's going on in different foreign countries, particularly developing countries.
Yeah.
Which I believe what the late Steve Jobs, because all Apple Computers is basically a private label. I know he traveled over to India. And in many parts of Asia, they just do things smaller. You know, they shrink, scale it down. And I believe he got that idea when he was visiting, India. And then he found, him and Wiles had found somebody in China or Vietnam, to where you talk about currency. The dollar, in Vietnam, I don't know if I had that was still listed. But, Uganda at least. You know, the dollar, $1 equals 35,000 Ugandan shillings. I think Vietnam, $1 equals like 3,000 dong or what have you. But it's everything you said, Maya, we need to be thinking forward. I was even telling a college professor friend of mine that I think they should be instructing their students to think 10, 15, 20, 30 years into the future about where their particular major might be. But for some reason, they're not doing that. But for instance, my major in college was mass communication, electronic media. For some reason, we were never connected to the computer science department. We were connected to the journalism department, but we were never connected to the computer science department. And at least where I went to school, they're still not. So a lot of stuff you just have to tune into people like Imani and go from there. Anyway, if anybody's got any questions for Imani, this is a new podcast that we're doing with her, is titled The Wealth Watchers. And your host for the evening is Imani Murph, 619-768-2945.
If you have any questions to ask of Imani, just press
one. You got 10 minutes to ask me questions because I'm leaving.
Okay, you got, well, you heard what she said. So if you're in the studio already, press,
okay.
Yeah, press one. Now, oh, and speaker, well, here's one that's got area code 718. Your mic is open.
Hello, everyone. This is Dal. Hello, yes, New York. How you doing, everyone?
Fine. How are you?
Good.
I'm okay. I know, like, it would be nice if we can go online and, you know, see each other, you know.
Yes.
I would,
yes.
You know, I would do that much quicker because, you know, I know, you know,
let's
everybody
do that.
Talks
do that
about,
next
say again?
We're going to definitely do that next time on Facebook.
Or we can do like on the phone and then we could pull up our screen to understand and everybody could be on the same page. So like me, LA and a few of us did that like a few weeks ago. We said like 40 acres and a mule. So every now and then from time to time, I'm on my computer right now. I have like a Smart Touch MV20. I have that. And the reason why I got that because, you know, we used to hear that saying, it's all about location, 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 location. So what I wanted to do, I wanted to earn some extra money. And I didn't want to go out there. Today they interviews, so I said, let me work from home. Let me be like customer service. And let me, like, if somebody called me, hey, where my product or something like that, or I troubleshoot through my computer. So the troubleshooting I'm talking about right now and the things I'm talking about learning right now, what each of us can learn and understand is, like, we can talk on the phone and pull things up on our computer. We can have our own little group. That, you know, if one happened to call out that day or one can't do something, other ones can fill the shoes. The other part of that group can fill the shoe. So just because one is not able to do it, it doesn't fall down. You know, the group doesn't collapse because of somebody else is not able to pick up the duties. And I think that's I'm at a point now. I realize I'm kind of like old school. I was raised by the older ones. Friends and family is more important than jobs to me. That,
yeah.
You know, I know I have to work to sustain myself. Like Stefan said, let's sustain ourselves. You know, the stuff that we put in our mouth. Cause everybody has to eat, and the one who controls the food controls everything. You know,
right.
The one who controls the nourishment controls everything. So I'm looking to make that less one thing that I have to worry about. I will never have to go to anybody for food, will never have to go to anybody for work, and, you know, or for something to drink, you know, for survival, basically. And I want to get back to, like, learning how to build and construct things and fix things. I feel that my basics, you know, they throw you someplace anywhere in the world, you see a abandoned vehicle, learn how to put that together. Or service it, or process of elimination. Certain things in this time and age, I believe, are necessary. Like, you know, medical, know how to, heal yourself if you're injured. Learn how to grow. Learn how to protect yourself against wild animals out there. In case, you know, you have to abandon the city. What animals are out there in our neck of the woods? Whether it be bear, deer, or don't do certain things if you see a deer because maybe they're hit you with the antlers, you know, like, you know, certain things that needs to be done in case, you know, animals out the zoo, they escape, you know, how to get away from them or whatever, you know, certain things, you know, how to protect ourselves, you know. And one thing I am going to open up coming up in the future, I want a handicap self-defense, all type of handicaps. No legs or whatever, you know, I want to open up something like that for the handicapped and the elderly and, you know, are able, mentally challenged, are able to defend yourself.
That
sounds like a couple of new industries.
Yeah. That's something I'm working on.
sounds very like
well.
Definitely
Robin's on. She's a social media person, so if you wanted to do a live stream on with Facebook,
yeah,
you got Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope. She does all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking that at the very least, people can join the Wealth Watchers Facebook group and just request, and then the next time people in that group will be able to read articles before it's time for the show in preparation for the discussion, and also join in on the live and the chat in the group.
Oh, so we can go to Facebook now to go to the Wealth Watchers and join up?
Yes.
Okay. Say no more. I'm going in now.
When you say T, you talk the way that you spell that, how do you spell that? Is that T-H-E-E?
No, T-H-E-E space W-E-A-L-T-H. Space, WATCHERS.
And the beginning of the spelling is what?
The Wealth Watchers, THE.
Okay.
And I just joined.
Great. There'll be more content in there, but I think for now, people can just join, and then by next week they'll be approved. There may be some admissions questions because everybody cannot join because everybody isn't invited. Everybody can't come, okay? So everybody may not be approved for the group, and don't be offended. Maybe it's just not right for you. We'll see.
Okay. Any other content that you want to add to this podcast, Imani?
Can I say something, please? It says the Wealth Watcher program helps you make purchasing decisions, big and small, build positive habits to last your lifetime, analyze your expenses. Is that the one?
No, that is not it.
No, it's the, T-H-E, the or
that's
the
what
Wealth Watchers.
That's what
I'm on it right now. Just join.
Okay. The Wealth Watchers, okay. Okay, it helps you. Okay. Wealth Watchers, building wealth for future generations?
No, it doesn't say anything. It says the Wealth Watchers, period, and that's it.
Okay, and that's .com, right?
No.
It's a Facebook group.
Oh, it's a Facebook. Oh, okay. All right.
It's a Facebook
That is a website that I do own, but I haven't put anything up there. Maybe I have. I don't know, but I don't think I've put anything up yet. So,
okay,
in the future, you'll be able to go to thewealthwatchers.com.
Is that the one that says saving sexy?
No.
Wow.
It doesn't.
Go ahead, Imani.
Just wait until next week for this. If you can't figure this out, then you'll be able to for sure by next week, hopefully, when we talk again, you'll join in. And then we'll have better details. But if you can go to the Facebook group, it's Wealth Watchers is the name of the group. It is a closed group. And join in, and we'll have some good discussion.
Okay.
Because she's given assignments before the podcast, which is that's good.
Yeah.
That's organized.
Kind of have some organized thoughts.
Okay. Any closing thoughts, Imani?
My closing thoughts is do what's best for your family and always think positively of yourself and highly of yourself and your abilities. There's always an opportunity for forward movement, even when things seem to be in a downward trend, they almost always go back up. And the worst thing that can happen is that you die. Literally, that's the worst. There's nothing worse than that. And as long as you're alive, there's another chance to make money, create wealth, to have a strong family. And so move forward from that perspective and do everything from that perspective. That's my last thought.
Okay. And let's see, for people that were looking for Reba Brown will be around next Sunday with her information out of Chicago. Pleasant Stephens, his podcast, Strictly Business, is on Monday through Friday. Pleasant, you want to give that number, or do I need to give it?
Go ahead and give it. Go ahead and give it.
Strictly Business, Monday through Friday at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, and that number is 516-387-1512. That's 516-387-1512. And then It's My House. We're on Monday through Friday at 10:30 a.m., 9:30 Central, Monday through Friday. So, and on that note, thank you, Imani. We look forward to Wealth Watchers. And if you go to Facebook, it's the T-H-E Wealth Watchers. That's it. You'll get there. On that note, everybody have a good rest of the day and have a positive week.
Happy Sunday.